Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Invisible China: How the Urban-Rural Divide Threatens China's Rise, is a nonfiction work of political economy and social policy by Scott Rosell and Natalie Hell. It argues that China's celebrated rise masks a deep structural weakness in its rural human capital, especially in education and child health, rather than focusing on elite cities. The book examines the conditions facing the majority of China's children, many of whom are born in rural areas and enter life at a disadvantage in schooling, nutrition, and access to quality services. Drawing on long-running field research associated with the Rural Education Action Program, the authors connect these rural deficits to China's ability to sustain growth, move up the value chain, and avoid the middle-income trap. The book is both diagnostic and prescriptive. It identifies the educational and health bottlenecks shaping labor market outcomes, then proposes practical interventions that could improve long-term development prospects. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, China's growth story rests on a weaker rural workforce than headlines suggest. The book's central argument is that China's economic success has been built on a labor force that still contains a large, underprepared rural population. Rosell and Hell challenge the common impression that China's rise automatically means broad human capital gains. They show that the country's urban prosperity and technological image can conceal very low average educational attainment in the countryside, where many children still grow up with limited schooling quality and weaker health support. This matters because economic modernization depends not only on top universities and advanced cities, but on the average skill level of the workforce. If a large share of workers enters adulthood with insufficient literacy, numeracy, and health, then productivity growth becomes harder to sustain. The book's analysis therefore shifts attention away from national averages and toward the distribution of opportunity, which is where the real constraint lies. Its key insight is that China can look globally impressive while still carrying a rural human capital deficit large enough to threaten long-term development. Secondly, the middle-income trap frames the book's warning about no man's land. A major analytical framework in the book is the middle-income trap, the idea that countries can reach a level of development where they are too expensive for low-wage manufacturing but not skilled enough for high-wage innovation-led production. Rosell and Hell argue that China is approaching or entering this difficult zone. Their no-man's-land metaphor captures the danger more sharply. Wages have risen enough to reduce China's advantage in simple labor-intensive industries. Yet the workforce as a whole still lacks the average skills needed to support a fully advanced economy. This framing is important because it links education and health policy to macroeconomic competitiveness. The book is not simply saying that rural inequality is unfair. It is saying that inequality has become a structural economic risk by situating China's rural educational deficit inside a development trap. The authors explain why local problems in schools, clinics, and villages can have national consequences for growth, industrial upgrading, and employment. Thirdly, rural schooling and child health are treated as economic infrastructure. The book emphasizes that schooling quality and child health are not side issues but foundations of future productivity. It argues that many rural children face multiple disadvantages before they even reach the labor market: weaker schools, poorer teachers, higher dropout rates, and health problems that interfere with learning. The authors focus on problems such as untreated vision issues, anemia, and parasitic infections because these conditions can reduce classroom performance and long-term attainment. In this view, health and education function like economic infrastructure. If children cannot see the blackboard, stay attentive, or remain in school long enough to build skills, the economy loses future workers who could have been more productive. This is one reason the book gives so much weight to early intervention. It suggests that relatively low-cost public health measures and better school support can yield large returns because they affect the basic conditions under which human capital is. Though the logic is cumulative, small early deficits become large adult disadvantages, and those disadvantages eventually become national economic constraints. Fourthly, the book combines field research with a critique of misleading national averages. Invisible China is distinctive for grounding its arguments in extensive field research rather than broad generalizations about Chinese development. The authors draw on work associated with REAP and on surveys from rural areas to show how national success metrics can obscure deep internal inequality. One of the book's recurring concerns is that aggregate indicators can flatter China's performance. Strong urban schools, elite universities, and major industrial hubs create an image of broad competence, but they do not represent conditions in much of the countryside. By separating urban and rural outcomes, the book reveals why international comparisons can be misleading if they rely on top-tier cities or selective samples. This methodological point matters because it changes what counts as evidence of progress. The book asks readers to look at the full population, not just the visible parts of it. That approach gives the argument credibility and also explains why the book is more than a polemic. It is a data-driven attempt to reinterpret China's rise through the lens of unequal human capital formation. Lastly, the policy message is incremental, practical, and focused on scalable interventions. Although the book's diagnosis is sobering, its policy stance is not purely pessimistic. Rozelle and Hell argue that China can improve outcomes through targeted interventions in education and child health, especially in rural areas. The solutions they discuss are notable for being practical rather than ideological. Stronger rural schooling, vocational preparation, health campaigns, and specific public health measures that can reduce barriers to learning. The point is not that one grand reform will solve the problem, but that many small, evidence-based changes can raise the floor of opportunity. This is where the book stands out from more general critiques of China. It does not merely describe inequality or predict decline. It identifies mechanisms through which policy can alter life chances. The author's emphasis on implementation also reflects their research background, since they are concerned with what works on the ground rather than with abstract development rhetoric. The result is a book that connects diagnosis with action, making it useful for policymakers and readers who want to understand how human capital policy affects national strategy. In conclusion, Invisible China is best suited for readers who want a serious research-based explanation of how China's future may be constrained by rural inequality. Economists, policy analysts, China specialists, educators, and general readers interested in development will all find value in it. Its main benefit is that it connects the everyday realities of rural schooling and child health to big questions about productivity, industrial upgrading, and the middle income trap. That gives the book both intellectual and practical relevance. It also stands out from many books on China because it is less interested in spectacle than in structure. Instead of treating China's rise as self-evident or focusing only on its cities and elite institutions, it examines the hidden costs of unequal human capital formation. The result is a book that is unusually useful for understanding why impressive national growth can coexist with deep developmental fragility. Readers looking for a clear argument, supported by field research and tied to concrete policy implications, will find it more distinctive than more general accounts of China's power or decline. If you would like to support Scott Rozelle, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.